Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have with me this goofy guy. He's a pretty cool dude, though. And in fact, I might be goofier than him. We'll see what he thinks about that. But this is my news buddy, Martin Repatriated Willis.
That's right. I am back in the States, and boy, am I happy to be home.
Mm-hmm. And the reason I say repatriated, because I should say this is new. So we're on KGRA radio, which is awesome. And in fact, there'll be some changes. I'm sorry to cut you off, but let me just get this out real quick.
Oh, sure.
It's important because the KGRA people are listening right now. So the show is going to be airing on Monday night after Jimmy Church. So Jimmy Church, everybody knows him. He's super cool. He is a guest host on Coast to Coast AM and all of this stuff. He plays on KGRA. So so the changes are that we'll air on KGRA on Monday nights, like early Tuesday morning, really type of thing. And then the podcast will go out on Tuesdays. So that'll be the difference. But we've got these new listeners who might not know much, if anything, about us and something about you. That's why I butt in before you made your next comment, is that you've been in Russia for like a month.
Actually, 44 days.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is way too long.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and I started to feel like Snowden. And I
really,
almost.
Well, there's a lot that's gone on in the last 45 days too.
There's been some tension.
Yeah,
and, you know, I learned a lot about the Russian news, and it was very interesting how their take is on what, you know. I was listening online to American news, and then listening to Russia's news, and it was quite fascinating as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and if people want to hear more about you in Russia, I would say, aren't regular listeners to this show, they're going to have to go to openminds.tv and listen to some of the archives over the last few weeks, because you have still been able to join us from Russia to talk about UFO news at the beginning of the show, which is so awesome. And the internet worked really well. I mean, you sounded practically as good as you sound now.
I know. A satellite internet there. It's mm-hmm. really something. And, you know, while I was in Russia, you know, don't tell anyone, but I figured out a way to make
Well,
millions.
You're live on a podcast, so you say don't tell anyone, but, you know, there's thousands of people that are going to hear this.
Oh, well, I probably should finish it then. I know
Yeah,
a way.
You can't tease us. You got to tell us.
I know. Well, maybe this will be a good way to get some backers.
Ooh, good idea.
Because I have an idea that is worth millions of dollars, and you know what it is?
What's that?
Bring American toilets to Russia.
Really?
Oh, I'm telling you, they have the most primitive toilets in Russia.
What?
And they do, I'm telling you. And we could just sweep the whole nation, the Russian continent, the
like,
Federation.
What's the problem with their toilets? Like, what are they like?
Well, it's this little, you know, they look sort of like a toilet, and then the water goes in from above and from a hose that comes out of the wall. It's really strange looking. And then there's no, like, water in the toilet. There's, like, a half a cup of water in the toilet in this little tiny hole.
Hmm.
And it's just very, very primitive. And I just say we could, you know, that this is our calling. I was thinking about getting, you know, some semi-trucks over there, loading them up with millions of, like, American standard toilets and just sweeping the nation and just becoming filthy rich.
interesting. And you know, you've gone to Russia while you've been doing this show a couple times, and so you've done the show remotely from Russia a couple times, and this is the first time you've ever mentioned this toilet issue.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to, you know, I'm always like looking for, you know, I have a friend that actually brought the cellular service to Russia.
Hmm.
And
wow.
He became filthy rich. So I think toilets is, you know, it's about time they get new toilets there.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So this is a UFO show, just so people know. And I want to let the new listeners know that sometimes we do go off on tangents on things like this. But I think people will find that terribly interesting. I certainly do about these toilets and stuff. But it is a UFO show. And I guess now we'll start to talk some UFO. And to begin with, to tell you who my guests are. So even though Martin and I are going to talk about some news at the beginning of the show, we always do, I have guests on the show. And the guests are really cool today. They actually are some of my closest friends. However, I haven't had them on the show for no good reason in particular, but it's especially justified right now because we all were at the MUFON Symposium, and these friends I'm talking about, their names are Stacy Wright and Jim Mann, and they run the Arizona chapter of MUFON, and they won an award at the symposium, and it was the best MUFON chapter or the chapter of the year. And it's very well deserved, and we'll talk to them about that award. You know, how they got involved with MUFON and about winning that award. So that's the guest. So that's going to be really, really cool. And great. I guess, you know, the elephant in the room when it comes to the MUFON symposium is, of course, it was very controversial this year, not just because of the topic, which was secret space programs, because there are some legitimate people to talk about that. So, for instance, one of the speakers they had there used to work at OpenMinds.tv and write for Open Minds magazine when we had it, and that was Michael Schratt. He's awesome. He's great. Mm-hmm. You've had him on your show. I love Michael. And, of course, his talks are very well researched. And his point was he creates these amazing models of different sightings, mostly triangular craft. And he discusses about, you know, the potential of these craft being secret, top secret aircraft or possibly even spacecraft. So real legit stuff. And he's, I think, onto something. Of course, here in Phoenix, where we are headquartered, we had the Phoenix Lights. And so there's a lot of debate over what that might have been. And if that, whether or not that was, you know, some kind of top secret craft or not. So that's the kind of thing he talked about. However, that, you know, there's not too much as far as legitimate wise past that. Richard Dolan did speak, and he did, you know, shed doubt or share his doubts about some of the other speakers, because some of the other speakers are like Corey Good or Andrew Basiaggio, who claim to be part of like some secret space program, but their claims are very bombastic. I got in a conversation with Andrew Basiaggio for a while, and he's a nice guy, and he did agree that, okay, I need to have some more evidence, you know, for what I talk about if I want to be taken seriously. Because he seemed to know that I was skeptical about the topic and his topic in particular, and I feel justified in that because he's talking about how he even tried to tell me directly something I already knew, he claims, which is that he was trained to do these time-like jumps and these teleportation things. And, you know, that Obama was in his training program for this. So really wild stuff. And then he told the crowd things he said before, which is, you know, he and Obama were picked before to be president, that he's going to be president. In fact, I saw he had claimed he was going to be president this past time, but it didn't work. Some kind of the timelines crossed or something, so it won't be till next time. Stuff like this. And then he was talking about plesiosaurs on Mars, and they have to train to learn about the fauna and the animals on Mars for safety reasons. And that these plesiosaurs on Mars are probably the same thing that are the Loch Ness. So the, you know, Loch Ness has family on Mars type of stuff. I mean, just wild, wild stuff. And, you know, this alleged secret space program really isn't UFO. I shared a disappointment that MUFON had chosen this kind of thread to go mm-hmm. down. But you know what? In the end, and I say this over and over again, is that MUFON's full of people who I believe their hearts are in. They're not trying to deceive anybody. I know the board with MUFON and the decision makers. They just really believe this stuff. They really believe that there could be something going on here, and that's their right to do so. I think some of the MUFON researchers that we have at the UFO Congress are more legit, and you have a lot more credibility.
Right. Now, I do know that Andrew was running in the 2016 campaign.
Right. Yeah, he did run, yeah. But of course, he probably got a handful of votes.
Yeah. Well. And he was supposed to come up with some type of evidence of time travel, according to either something I read or Kevin Randall told me that he was saying that he was going to come up with some type of evidence.
He told me that, too, because I told him, you know, how can I take any of that seriously? Or even I get so many anecdotal claims for wild stuff, as you do and all of us do in this field, constantly. How can I take it seriously without anything to back it up? And he agreed, and he said he and Michael Sala are working on that, and he's provided Michael Sala with some information where he's going to do some Freedom of Information Act requests to get some information. Michael Sala being a quote-unquote researcher who great and another really nice guy. I mean, these are nice guys who I don't think are seeking to deceive people, but they just believe some really wild, bombastic stuff that unfortunately they don't really have anything to back up at this point, in my humble opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, I'm glad you went anyway. I'm sure you probably made some good connections and saw a lot of people.
I did. It was kind of fun. We kind of became the de facto center for the resistance. you know, we had our table in there, and we were promoting the conference, the UFO Congress, which Open Mind sponsors, and I'll give some people some news about that in a minute, too. And so we were also selling some books and DVDs, stuff like that, and then Travis Walton, who's a friend of ours, didn't have any space. He wanted, at the last minute, decided to go out there, so he was sitting at our table with us, and people were just coming in after the talks, and I think a lot of people just weren't aware, you know, of what these guys had to say, and I mean, some of these people were really heated and upset, and mm-hmm. they're like, how the heck can MUFON have these people? Oh, my gosh, what these guys are saying is absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, we kind of became the center. Not that we sought to do that or, you know, sought to disparage MUFON, because we didn't, and nor do I. I think disagreeing with people in a friendly and professional way is a lot different than, talking badly about people or really anything like that. So we didn't do that. People, you know my perspective certainly, and or at least many did. And so they just came to, because they knew they could get somewhat of a sympathetic ear by saying, hey, you know, this is kind of wild. So that was kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, they had some place to go, a balanced area to discuss with the because I remember you and I talked about the symposium after the lineup was scheduled. I remember you had some things to say to a few people about it. But nothing changed. But you did try.
Yeah, and I went, you know, not necessarily to support, a little bit to support MUFON, because I still have friends in there, and a little bit to but largely also to promote our event, but because I had decided not to go. But then I thought, well, that's kind of silly because, it's a way to get to people and talk with people. And I'm glad I did, because I certainly was not alone with some hesitation towards the lineup. You know what? Another guy made a great point. His name is Jareem Cantrell, or Scott Cantrell, he goes by. He's in Georgia, a MUFON guy. A lot of fun. He listens to the show. So, hey.
Shout out.
Yeah, shout out. But, he made a good point that even though there were lots of perspectives, and he knows mine, people were very civil. And there were, you know, a lot of us went out there expecting fireworks and these big old fights and maybe some people making a scene. Nobody made a scene at all. Even though there were disagreements, people were very civil about it and very professional. And, you know, that is, I'm glad he pointed that out, because that is a great positive takeaway, that we can disagree in a civil and professional manner. And that's really important, that we respect that we all have opinions, you know?
Right, right. I get it. Yep.
So, do you want to hear some exciting Congress news? Man, I got to hurry, because we got to talk about some UFO news, too. But, okay. The exciting news is that myself and my girlfriend now own the UFO Congress.
Yay! I am so happy for you.
And this is like the big announcement. We've told some people. We told people at MUFON because we finalized it. But essentially, we started this company out of This World Media and Events. And that is our company to run the UFO Congress. I still work for Open Minds, and you know, Open Minds, of course, is dear to my heart, and I've been doing it for a long time. So, and this is Open Minds UFO Radio, and Open Minds, even though it's owned by someone else, the same person, will continue to exist and continue as is, and so will the conference. But because I, you know, ran the conference before, and there's a couple people who helped out with the conference that won't be helping out anymore, unfortunately. And essentially, they were just people who were related to the owner's company of Open Minds. And they don't really have an interest in this topic. They were just kind of helping out him and his company. But now that he no longer owns it, they don't really feel, you know, compelled to help. And I don't blame them. I mean, you know, this is, if it's not something they're passionate about, it's not a problem. And luckily, we have plenty of people to help. So they're great people. And they're certainly, we all have great relationships still. Otherwise, most of the people you see at the conference are all going to be the same. I'll still be emceeing it. And we've got a great lineup. We have open registration. So registration for the UFO Congress is open. If you're listening to KGRA, you'll hear ads running on KGRA on a regular basis about the conference. So go register. We don't have any of the speakers listed yet, but the rooms at the host hotel are almost sold out. If you're not familiar with the UFO Congress, it is a large event, and we sell out the entire host hotel and hotels that surround the area. So if you want to be in the host hotel, go to UFOCongress.com and find those instructions and get your hotel room now, and then you can also register. So even though we have an open registration, nor have we listed speakers, the hotel is almost sold out. But we just have a ton of people that come to this on a regular basis. We will be listing speakers in the next week or two. And in fact, next week during the show, I should be able to tell people about some speakers. So,
wow. And I like to go out there. Of course, last year, the snow, major snowstorm kept me from making it out there. I'm going to drive out this year, but I do want to tell the person that may want to register and come out there, the hotel on the location is just wonderful. It's such a great, relaxing place. You don't want to have to drive from another hotel. The hotel, it's called
Wikopa.
It is just a wonderful place. So you better call in. I don't even think they need to take any money from you to register there. They just need a credit card or something, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, they do. And especially this year, because they want to make sure, because the rooms go so quickly, they want to make sure that people are serious when they book. So if you don't cancel at least 2 weeks before the event, if you're not going to use your room, then you will get charged. So that is, so you do need to, but you won't be charged until then. So you can go reserve your room and you won't be charged. So yeah, go do that and go register. Go to UFOCongress.com for more about that. But we better get to the news because we only have 6 minutes.
Okay. All right. I'll start then. Okay. So this story is really interesting. It's a witness says a cloaking UFO had a U.S. Air Force insignia on the tail. This happened in Moore Park, California, and this goes back to June 25th. and it was around 11 o'clock, and he was the witness was sitting in a drive-through lane at a restaurant, and he saw this object, and it looked like it was like cloaking in and out of like existence, and it hurt his eyes to even look at it. And he said it seemed like it was using some type of neural confusion. Those are his words. sort of like trying to look at a needle coming at your eye. That kind of gives me the willies to think about that.
Yeah.
And but it looked big enough to hold one or two people. And on the tail section, it was like a tail stabilizer. He said he clearly saw in white lettering USAF 003. And he said there was also some bright silver, like, fixtures, like beacon lights. And very interesting. I mean, very odd. It kind of, you know, you hear a lot of people suggesting UFOs as some type of secret military, you know, craft or something like that. So there's nothing really that close by as far as Air Force bases. There's Travis Air Force Base, there's Edwards, there's the L.A., Air Force Base, but nothing really close, to Ventura, where this town is very close. I think it's in Ventura County.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a really weird one. This guy says he saw this insignia, and he says he saw this craft appear and then disappear. Excuse me, with this kind of electronic staticky stuff. It's a really strange account. This one was added to openminds.tv. It was sent to us by Roger Marsh, who's the director of communications for the Mutual UFO Network. But it is interesting. I like it, too, because it's so odd and different.
And there was, like, electromagnetism around. I guess he was talking to the guy at the drive-through window, and they both seemed to have felt something going on.
Very, very strange.
Very strange.
Another article that we posted recently with a lot of great cases is from Philip Mantle. So Philip Mantle is a UK researcher and author, and some of you may be aware of him, and certainly if you're a regular listener, you are. But he contributes to Open Minds on a regular basis, and he sent us an article that is in most part an older article from Graham Birdsall, it looks, I think. But it's about UFOs in North Yorkshire. And he actually was reading some of the recent UFO sightings on openminds.tv. And it reminded him of some of these sightings that are in this article. But some really interesting articles from the Moors, which I don't... I should look that up. What does Moors mean? Is that like a valley or something?
It's a you mean the actual term of it?
Yeah.
You know, I've heard of the Moors, but I want to say it's almost a body of water, but you know, I'm probably going to be totally wrong as far as that goes.
Yeah, so I should look that up because people talk about the Moors and you hear about this in England and stuff. But anyway, some interesting photos and well, at least sightings that they described there in that article. So it's pretty cool. So you can check all this out at openminds.tv. So we have only like a minute or so left. And that time goes so quickly, huh?
It sure does. Right. Yeah. So, I know there's some more stories to tell. And they're just go to openminds.tv. And you can see the recently posted stories.
Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to hear us next week. And we'll be talking more about news. We just had so much symposium and UFO Congress news to go over this time. But join us next week. And also, you can hear Martin on his podcast, Podcast UFO.
That's right. Every Wednesday at 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you.
Made in the good old USA, even if it's broadcast from Russia on occasion.
That's right. And don't forget, I need funding for the Royal Flush Toilet Company.
Oh, that's right. The toilets. Right. We can't forget that.
That's right. Yeah.
I was going to say, because in Russia, they have their toilets are UFOs, unusual flushing objects.
Beautiful. Love it.
Does that work?
That ties in. Wonderful. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us once again. Let's go ahead and talk with Stacy and Jim after this KGRA break. happy to welcome to the show, surprisingly for the first time, Jim Mann and Stacy Wright, the Super Twin team that runs Phoenix MUFON. Hello.
Hello there, Alejandro.
How are you?
Good. Have you ever been referred to as the Super Twins before?
No, not that one.
No, we've been called the Dynamic Duo.
That's a good one. Or I guess it was the Wonder Twins, or wasn't it the old cartoon superhero kids?
Yeah.
But I guess I'm off topic here. But anyway, okay, so we're talking about all kinds of stuff related to UFOs. But what's really, really exciting is that we all just came back from the MUFON Symposium last weekend. And you two, and your whole group there in Arizona MUFON won an award.
That's right, we did. We're very proud of that.
So what was the name of the exact award?
It is the MUFON Chapter of the Year for 2017.
And were you surprised to win it?
Yeah, that was a very fun surprise. We had no idea that was coming, and it's actually the very first time that MUFON has ever offered that award to anyone, so we feel pretty honored to be the first recipients.
Yeah, that's what was fun about it, is it was super surprised because no one knew they were going to award that award, and it's never been awarded before. So you guys won it for the first time.
We did, yes. Yeah, so yeah, we're pretty excited about it. It's awesome. It's a really nice crystal kind of a trophy thing, and it's sitting here on the shelf in all its splendor. It looks great.
So to explain to listeners kind of the experience, if they haven't been to a MUFON symposium or a UFO Congress, because we both have these, you know, banquets where we, at least some of us, dress up and we give awards and stuff like this. So that's what it's like, you know, this fancy banquet, and they're giving out awards and they have a keynote speaker. And so you all are sitting there. And then you hear that they're going to be awarding this award, a brand new award. What was going on in your heads at that time?
Well, when we were sitting there, and you imagine, if you will, there's 400 or 500 people sitting around dinner tables, everyone sipping their after-dinner wine, and we're watching the awards for, like, Investigator of the Year and awards like that. And Jan Harzan is up there, and he's in the light, and he says, now we're going to do something new. And he says, for the chapter of the year, something we've never done before. And Stacy and I just kind of looked at each other and we said, you know what, we could be contenders on this. And as Jan explained it, and as he slowly got into how they were going to do this, he said, and the award goes to, bam, it was Jim Mann and Stacy Wright and Phoenix MUFON and Dennis Fehrermuth. And we both looked at each other and about fell out of our chair because we just thought, you got to be kidding. This took us totally by surprise.
Now,
So we got up and we had to walk up to the front, to the stage, because that, you know, that's where you get your award. And as we're walking up there, we're in such disbelief. And people are standing and clapping, and I never realized, Alejandro, how much we are loved by so many of our peers. And it was just a really emotional moment for us.
Mm-hmm.
Still is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And luckily, I mean, you've been known to wear a black tie at some of these events, Jim. And I'm sure, luckily, yeah, you guys dress up, because some people don't. Like, some people be in their T-shirts and shorts and stuff, you know, and because they're not expecting to be the focus of anything. But I'm sure you guys were dressed nice.
You know, it's funny because that's exactly when we were getting dressed that night. I thought to myself, oh, I'm just going to put on a pair of jeans and, you know, and maybe just a shirt. And I might even have my hat on. Okay. It's not going to be anything big. And then I write the last moment. I thought, well, you know what? Why don't you try to be a little more classier than that? I was telling myself. So I put on a suit coat, put on my black dress pants and my shiny cowboy boots. And Stacy dressed up really nice looking. So the both of us went down there thinking, well, this is going to be a nice sort of a semi-formal evening dinner. And so I'm just glad we did, because
it could have been worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hilarious. Cause I could just see, cause most of that weekend, you know, I myself was in jeans and t-shirts, which a lot of people, you know, haven't seen me that way. I mean, I would go, I like to dress up for formal dinners a little bit. Plus, you know, Karen, my girlfriend, will not let me not dress up. So,
Karen is always dressed up.
Yeah. I could imagine
she is the boss.
She is the boss, exactly. But I could imagine being caught off guard and not being ready for it and not dressing up. That would have been
kind of funny. Being in the middle of summer and being in Las Vegas, you know, we're all kind of in the summer attire thing going on. So, yeah, it could easily have been a lot worse than, you know, what we were in. So we were glad that we dressed up at least a little bit. But, yeah, it was a really nice evening. You know, they have a very nice sit-down dinner in there. Everyone was happy and in a good mood and got the awards. And the keynote speaker, Michael Sala, that all went really well. It was a great evening.
So I guess now getting into why you won the award, because there's many reasons why you won the award. I mean, if they were to ask me, and if it was up to me, I've interacted with a lot of the states, and I would agree you all are certainly very deserving. And one of the reasons you're deserving, so we can kind of gush on someone, and you don't have to be humble because it'll be on a different person, is you have, I think, one of the best, if not the best, director of investigations in Dennis Friermuth. How long has he been doing that? And I think you all would agree he's incredible.
I think Dennis is next to none. I don't know, and I don't want to say anything bad about any other the chief investigators because I just don't know them, okay? But Dennis, I think that Arizona MUFON is sort of blessed to have someone that is so dedicated to the MUFON mission as Dennis is. Now, Dennis has got a background in law enforcement, and I think he did a stint with NASA earlier in his career, and he's always been a real stickler for detail, and to the point to where sometimes he's frustrating, but he's frustrating to the truth. You know, we all want to believe that there is a UFO presence and an alien presence on this planet, and the evidence is there. It's quite overwhelming at times, but nothing will go past Dennis unless it is concrete. And when I tell you that there's got to be supporting data for the decision for a case to close out as a UFO, as a genuine UFO, the investigator better have done their homework to get that past Dennis. And now, Stacy and I, when we became directors for the Arizona MUFON organization, we selected Dennis as our chief investigator. We both agreed that we're going to give the chief investigator all the latitude that he needs to perform that job. And he's pretty much going to have the last word. Although, you know, I there's been a couple of times and I've disagreed with him and we've had to go toe to toe a little bit, but, no, Dennis is, he's extremely hardcore. And if you can get, if you see something in the sky and you call it a UFO, you better do your homework if you're going to get it past this. Mm-hmm. So he's really a good chief investigator.
And one of the things he does at the meetings, which is great because he has a background, he has a videography company. And so he creates these great videos at your meetings where he shows the stats. And what's interesting is, and I think to his speaks at how great he is that your unknown percentage in Arizona, although, you know, one of the highest states with the number of sightings reported, the unknown percentage is really low, something around 3%, I think, for last year, which just shows to me, you know, and knowing Dennis, he puts in a lot of hard work to do his best to make sure him and his investigators are trying to figure out what the heck someone saw.
Yeah, that's true. Dennis is he's the leader of this team. So we've got about 17 field investigators here in Arizona, and Dennis is definitely the leader of this. He has a really good protocol for all the FIs to follow, and we do trainings every year ourselves. We have, you know, a big annual field investigator training right here in Arizona. So Dennis is the leader of all that, and yeah, he's he's really good at what he does, and he's definitely a big part of our team. So between Jim, who is the state director, and myself, the assistant state director, and then Dennis, the chief investigator, you know, between the three of us, we just kind of run this really fun ship, and we just have a lot of fun. Phoenix MUFON has been a really great chapter. We've been doing it for, you know, I think it's 10 years this month, actually. So,
wow.
It's just been, yeah, it's been a decade of great fun and times and a lot of learning. We've learned a lot, and we just had so much fun with all the people. We do a lot of really fun stuff. So that's part of what I think has made us, you know, the chapter of the year, because we just, you can't do this without seeing the fun side of this whole genre. You know, there's some fun stuff to it, and we just kind of explore that too. So we do, you know, some of the great stuff, like you said, the stats. You know, we stick with our field investigator stuff pretty closely, but we try to really introduce astronomy to all the people and the field investigators, just so they have a good working knowledge of what they're doing. And we do go out on sky watches, weather permitting. We go to sky watches up in the Superstition Mountains after our monthly meetings. So we go out there and have a lot of fun, and we really get to know one another pretty well. You know, sitting around there in a camp chair with an ice chest there, you know, it just kind of sets the stage for it. So we also have a camp out that we do every year. So it's kind of a camp out sky watch that we have up in the high country every October. So we usually have 25 or 30 people show up for that. That's a lot of fun. It's 3 days of just, you know, being dirty, having fun, camping. We have a lot of people that are musicians in the groups. So we have a lot of guitars and banjos and some Navajo flute music and all kinds of fun stuff up there. So we have a blast doing that. But we just try to really incorporate some of the fun things that we can do with the group into it. So it's just not all hard-nosed business all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we'll get more into some of the reasons why, because there's many reasons I think that you all won that award and deserve it. But one of the things with Dennis, to wrap that part up, kind of to Jim's point, what's funny is, you know, we all interact with Mark D'Antonio too. He's been out here quite a bit. You know, he's someone that we refer to on the show quite a bit, because he helps us to, he doesn't like the term, but debunk, or at least figure out some of the sightings that come along. And he's often bursting our bubbles, but, you know, he knows what he's talking about. And Dennis has done that also with at least one Open Mind story where he did the hard work to figure out what it was, which is great. And I mean, that's really important, though. And that's one of the things that you all speak to as well at your meetings, is that, you know, we're here to explore and talk about the topic, but we also do have to be diligent in investigation.
Yeah, you know, there's nothing wrong with the term debunking, if it's healthy debunking, because what you do is you set out to find the truth. And then when you find that the facts and the data tells you that it was not a UFO, is that it was something else, a sky lantern or a drone or something in the sky, then you may step back and say, well, okay, I have debunked this. And I know a lot of people kind of frown at that term, but in the professional sense, if you're respectful about it, that's exactly what we do. You know, we do debunk some of these cases, but that's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be finding the truth, and you know, being a skeptic sometimes can get in the way, because then you're always thinking on the negative, because you're the great skeptic. And I think there's a balance, Alejandro, between debunking and being a skeptic and, you know, trying to find the truth. It's just called being objective and being open-minded. Mm-hmm. And Dennis is very good at that. And he directs and he leads the team of investigators that direction. And he's very good at it.
Yeah. Yep. Great stuff. Yeah. So Dennis is great, but you all are great. One of the great things about Phoenix MUFON, and Stacey, you touched on a bunch of this, and I want to talk about some of those things, because those are a lot of fun, and luckily I get to be involved, and we do have a lot of fun. But one of the great things is your group is so large. Like, you have monthly meetings where you bring in speakers, and some of these speakers are, you know, the people that you'll see at a lot of the different conferences, at the symposium or at the UFO Congress. Really great people, but you weren't able to start off like that. In fact, and now you bring in maybe sometimes like 150 people or something. But when you started, first you were just running Phoenix MUFON. Now you guys are running all of the state. But what was your first meeting like, the first time you guys put on a MUFON meeting, and how long ago was that?
Well, as I had mentioned before, it was just about 10 years ago. So Jim and I had met, and we were both, you know, discussing UFOs one day, and I said, you know, this is Phoenix. This is a world-class city. There's got to be some kind of a UFO meeting going on here in Phoenix. So I started looking around a little bit, and out on the internet, I found this funny group called MUFON, and I'm like, what is that? You know, let's see if there's a MUFON meeting here in Phoenix. Well, it looked like the group had been dormant for about 6 or 7 years, nothing going on at all, so I just took it upon myself to write to the international director and said, hey, what's up with Phoenix? You know, is there a meeting here, or what happened to this group? So lo and behold, about 2 weeks later, I got an email back saying, guess what? We're going to start a group up in Phoenix. So here's the next meeting time. So we went to that meeting, and there was about four people.
Wow.
There,
including you two?
Yeah. Yeah. There was about four people there. So, there wasn't a leader for the group, and they were looking for people that were interested in becoming a field investigator and being able to lead a group. And I thought, you know, we can do this. So I just shot my arm up, and lo and behold, Jim and I became the state section directors for Phoenix MUFON. So it started out very slow. Although our first guest speaker was actually Stanton Friedman. So we're very, wow, very lucky to have that happen. It just was a fluke that he was in the area anyway. And so he came, and he was our speaker, and we had, I think, maybe, you know, 13 people there, okay? And it was...
Stan was such a gracious...
he was very gracious.
Yeah, Stan is such a gracious man. And he knew that we were just trying to get... We were trying to raise the Phoenix MUFON from the ashes, you know?
Yeah, and yeah. So he came in, actually, and spoke for free. He did,
wow,
this out of the goodness of his heart. He is a great guy, so... That's what started us off, even though it started a little slow. So from our meetings from that point on, we started meeting at a local fire station. They had like the meeting room at the fire station there, and that would hold about 40 people. So we soon outgrew that. We moved on to the public library, and then we moved on to a very techie university. And now we're at the beautiful Arizona Historical Society Museum, which is a awesome state-funded building, and we just feel really honored that they would, you know, let us have our meetings there. And we didn't realize it, but they felt very honored to have us there. The director of the museum actually asked us if we would be willing to partner with them on an exhibit in that big museum on the Phoenix Light. So of course we said yes, and so we funded this exhibit, and there's this great exhibit upstairs in the Arizona Historical Society Museum, all on the Phoenix Lights, and we had beautiful graphics and everything, and it's just one of their most popular exhibits up there, and they love us, and they love it, and they've been getting great feedback on it for about 1 year now. So that's all going really well, and I think we'll probably stay there at the location that we're in because it holds quite a few people in this beautiful auditorium that they have there, and it's just working out really well for everyone.
Hey, Alejandro, I want to make one comment.
Mm-hmm.
Phoenix MUFON, okay? Although, and Stacy's going to be set here and try to be humble about this, but you know what? I have to, and you know this too, Alejandro, because you know the both of us, you're personal friends of ours. Stacy is the engine behind this chapter. She is the one that when we go to conferences, she is the one that does the hard boots on the ground networking. She's the one that will run down a speaker and say, hey, do you want to speak to the Phoenix MUFON group? She'll get with a speaker, maybe like, for instance, out at the Congress, and she will talk to them and she'll make arrangements with them. Then she'll arrange the flight, you know, the flight arrange travel arrangements, and she does all that hard work that I don't do. And so she is the one that actually makes the Phoenix MUFNs come together. And that's a fact. She, so I always say that Stacy is the engine that, that fuels, that, that pushes Phoenix MUFN forward. And of course, you know, Stacy is my significant other. And so we're not married, but, the two of us have, you know, we're unified in this effort, but I have to give credit where credit's due. And it's to Stacy's hard work that keeps Phoenix MUFN rolling forward.
I would agree. Stacy is her own phenomena. She's a force. And yeah, it's great. Get stuff done.
She is. She's a mover and shaker.
Mm-hmm. So
I got the easy job. State director is an easy job.
Yeah.
If you've got a good assistant.
Well, it's all about leadership. It's about delegation. So,
yes.
And you got to, in order to stay, to keep things rolling and to divvy up all of the work. I mean, being a state director, running a MUFN state chapter is a lot of work, right?
Yeah, it's a full-time job. You've got to be dedicated. You have to want to do this.
And there's politics and personalities, and then there's stuff to get done. So it's just a multifaceted sort of thing.
And then there's the feedback from the general public. Our group, our 150, or who, you know, our average attendance over there at the museum is about 100 people per meeting. It will bump all the way up close to 200, and so it bumps around a little bit. And we do get feedback. Most everybody that attends our meeting are just wonderful people. The speakers, one of their final comments when we take them back to the airport the following day, and they're going to fly out, they're always so impressed with the quality of people that come to our meetings. And, you know, it's true. The speakers, you know, they know their presentations, okay? They know what they're going to talk about, but it's the question and answer session at the end of the presentation that just really gets that speaker involved, and they're always so happy that we have such good question and answer, because we have such a good dedicated group of people that come to our meetings.
Mm-hmm. What's funny too and interesting is your meetings are pretty long, which is great for a speaker because then you have more time to get into stuff, but they never seem too long. I mean, people, in fact, they seem just right, even though they're maybe twice as long as your typical lecture at a conference. There's lots of Q&A that gets in there. And I think you all would agree. It's rare that we're kind of sitting there twiddling our thumbs. It's always interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. We've got the great information that the speakers bring in, and then that good, you know, question and answer period at the end, that really helps. But yeah, so from start to finish, it's 3 hours that we're there. We usually have a break right in the middle where people can get up and stretch their legs and chat. And, you know, these people really make friends with each other. The group is really happy to see each other every month when they come in, and everyone's in a good mood. And so when you get, you know, a group of people that large where everyone is in a good mood at the same time under the same roof, it just creates its own good energy, and it just seems to really work.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and then it really works on those months where we have cookies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, food.
I was going to say cookies.
Food always helps. So, you know, just as a good excuse to have food, every time we have a solstice or an equinox, we have cookies to celebrate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, every 3 months we've got cookies at halftime, and, yeah that cheers people up.
Well, we're almost out of time for this segment. So for the listeners, you know, as I talked about, we're going to be on KGRA now. And so there are station breaks to take. So I'll wrap up this segment and we'll do a little pause. For those of you podcast listeners, you will not hear a break at all. But if you're on KGRA, you'll hear a commercial break and some great commercials. But one thing we'll explore when we get back, a little bit more of that about that Phoenix Lights display. And if there's a phenomenon, Stacy had mentioned something about cookies and the equinox. So that makes me think, is there some sort of phenomena there where cookies are better during an equinox? We'll explore that when we get back. Thank you. All right, we are back with Stacy Wright and Jim Mann. I think that the equinox thing, I was kidding about some sort of phenomena, but I guess I should ask, because it's just that it's a reason to celebrate, not necessarily that there's some sort of supernatural cookie thing going on. Or is there?
Well, you know, we've got a bunch of really good cooks in this group, so the ladies that bring in, you know, they volunteer to bring in cookies when we have a solstice month or an equinox month. So, yeah, it's these good cooks, and that's what makes the magic. That, you know, not only do we do that on those months, but these good cooks and a lot of our guest speakers that we had also contributed to a cookbook that we made.
Oh, so that's right.
About 5 or 6 years ago, we put together a cookbook. So we've got recipes in there from Stan Friedman, Grant Cameron, Nick Pope. I mean, we've got all these great recipes in there from our guest speakers and from the attendees at our meetings. And it just turned out really good. And every once in a while, we'll have those for sale out at the UFO Congress. But that was a lot of fun. So that's just one of those other little items that we do within the Phoenix MUFON chapter to keep it fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to talk about that display, which is super cool. And at the UFO Congress this last year, it was, the 20th anniversary of the event. So we did a special thing where we interviewed you all and people at the museum, showed clips, and then we put all those clips together on a YouTube piece that's out there so people can see the exhibit. But this is so cool that actual historical society, and if people saw this building and the money that Arizona Historical Society has, it's they're a large organization. I mean, they're no small time sort of thing. I mean, this place is gorgeous. Were you approached first by them for this project?
It's funny how this all came together. It was almost sort of like it was predestined or something. I don't know. But when we were over at the University for Advancing Technology, which is UAT, we were down to our last couple of meetings, and we knew that our contract and stuff was up and we had to move on. And we were just wondering where we were going to go from there, because we were having an attendance of 100 people. And you can go do your homework and you can find out that if you want to find a meeting place where you can meet regularly on schedule and you've got 100 or 150 people, it can get pretty pricey. And so we had someone in the audience that day. Stacy made a comment that this was going to be our last meeting, or are we going to have one more meeting or something like that. And one of the ladies in the audience happened to be the curator of the museum, of the Arizona Historical Society Museum. And she and her boyfriend were sitting there in the audience. And she came up to us afterwards and she said, "Hey, guys, we got this great auditorium over at the Historical Society that you guys might be interested in." Well, it just went uphill from there. It was almost like it was meant to be. And so we got in there a couple of months later, and it's just been a great experience ever since then. And then while we were there getting to the exhibit, after we moved in, the managers and the people in the museum were very interested in the MUFON organization. And just so happens that the curator of the museum, she had been attending our MUFON meetings at UAT. Well, she was also interested in doing a Phoenix Lights exhibit. And so she thought, well, wow, what a great idea. Let's get these people to help us do a Phoenix Lights exhibit. And I'll let Stacy tell you the rest of this story.
So we just, met with her, and they didn't want to have the standard Phoenix Lights information that everyone has heard before. They wanted to know, just the facts. What happened, when, who saw it, what area did it cover? So we went in there with the good information that we had gathered, and then we went in also with a couple of really good graphic artists. So we made up a really great exhibit up there that shows a timeline of the Phoenix Lights. You know, we don't really like to call it the Phoenix Lights too much, although it's known by that name, but it's really the massive Arizona flyover of 1997. So we showed that there was, information showing that there were 7 or 8 crafts throughout the state. We showed the timeline, and the area where it came down from the southern part of Nevada across the whole state of Arizona and on into Mexico. And we have a TV on the wall, a monitor that has a 6 or 7 minute looping video that has, and Dennis Freiermuth was the mastermind behind that one. He did a great job on that. So it's really an interactive exhibit up there. We've got a big V-shaped craft that we made with the lights on the bottom of it that's suspended from the ceiling. So it's right above the exhibit as you're going through it, which just really adds a lot of fun to it. And people have just really been loving it. It's a very, you know, interactive, exciting, fun exhibit up there. And it's just worked out well. So the museum's loving it. They're getting people going through there and commenting on it. And so they actually want to have something this coming spring that's kind of a Yay UFO Day there at the Historical Society Museum. So we're trying to put something together for that. I mean, we're not going to turn them down on that with such a mainstream facility, you know, state-funded, and they want to highlight UFOs. Yeah, we're going to jump on that one.
Yeah, that is awesome. And Jim, I mean, the exhibit is so professional. It looks great. It's so cool. And what's cool for people, like, right when you come into the museum, you have this great open lobby and then stairs up into the main exhibits. And it's right at the top of the stairs. So depending on which way you go, they recommend you kind of go on this timeline where you go around looking at stuff. But if you go the opposite way, because it's just right there, it's either the first or the last thing that you go through. So it's in a real prominent spot. It's not like hidden. I mean, they're not really shy of this exhibit or anything. It is just right there, boldly out there. And it's so cool. Did you create the model, Jim? Is that what I heard of the craft?
Well, we had got together. No, all of us did it. To answer your question, we all kind of collaborated on that. But when you're standing in the lobby and you're down at the bottom of those stairs and you look up those stairs and you can see into that dark room, and what you can see is that large boomerang-shaped model hanging up there in the dark ceiling with lights on it. It's just, it's so inviting. It looks so cool. And, but yeah, we got together and we, all of us, we had decided we're going to make a thing out of aluminum, or we're going to make it out of cardboard. We're going to make sure we put real lights in the thing according. And we did all of this according to the data and the input that we had received from, of course, witnesses. And another thing besides that model, which is, of course, one of the highlights of that exhibit up there, is I think that timeline on the wall is what, Stacy, about 12 foot long. Mm-hmm. It's a high resolution poster, and it takes up the entire wall, and it's about 12 foot long, and it's very detailed, and it's all based on reports from the various witnesses. And so that's an interesting thing just in itself. So the whole exhibit is just, it's really quite awesome. It's an awesome little experience, and you walk through there. And yeah, if you walk through the museum according to the arrows on the floor, the way they want to channel people through, actually that exhibit, the Phoenix Lights exhibit, is the last exhibit you see before you exit the museum. So it's sort of the last thing that's going to be on your mind when you leave. And, you know, I think that's kind of cool because you just experienced this whole beautiful museum. And then the last thing you see is the Phoenix Lights. And so
it sticks,
you know.
It does. Yeah. That's your last impression. And I've watched people because when we filmed out there, you know, we were out there for quite a while. And so I could see people come through. And it's funny because when they get to that point, often they look at the sign, they see the path you're supposed to go on, they go on that path, even though they're right next to the exhibit, most people don't notice it until they go through it at the end. And I've seen just in, you know, being there for half a day, several people get to the exhibit and they like almost do a double take. They're like, is this really what I think it is? And then they slowly go through it, you know, and look at everything, and they seem to really enjoy it. But they're taken aback at first because they're surprised, you know, is this really a UFO exhibit that that I'm going to end up in? And I think it does have a lasting impression.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So it's something we're very proud of, and I know the museum is very proud of it, and they love working with us. And, you know, the actually it's called the Arizona Heritage Center now. It used to be the Historical Society Museum. They've changed the name, and the director and the curator and everybody out there is just, they're all so friendly. And I just want to put a little plug in for that museum. If you haven't had a chance to go over there in Tempe, and go through that museum, I mean, it's just filled with Arizona history. Mm-hmm. And aside from, of course, I'm partial to the Phoenix Lights exhibit, of course, but it's a great historical museum. You really need it as a resident of this state, and even if you're not from this state, it's really worth the trip over to go through the museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great place. It's a great educational experience.
Yeah, beautiful area too, over by ASU and Tempe Town Lake and the Papago Park, where the zoo and the botanical gardens are in that area. It's a gorgeous area. Yeah. It's one of
and
my
you know,
favorite.
If you go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say it's one of my favorite areas in Phoenix.
Yeah, and if you go onto the Phoenix MUFON website at www.phoenixmufon.com, there is a tab at the top of the homepage where it says our venue, and if you click on that, it'll take you to their website. And I highly recommend to go to their website and just cruise around that website and look what all's there. Mm-hmm. It's really quite amazing.
Yeah. Now, we made you all a big highlight of our piece on the Phoenix UFO phenomena, mainly because I think you guys have a lot to say. Of course, you weren't investigators or with MUFON at the time it happened. However, you know, you've made the local MUFON group really strong, and it's a large organization, and you all have been involved with various different presentations and talks, but you also, if I'm not mistaken, to this day receive witness reports where people are saying, oh yeah, I saw that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do. We probably, you know, hear from people, I would say, once every couple of months, we've got someone either emailing in or calling in, and they'll talk to either Jim or I, and they say, you know, I saw those Phoenix lights back in 97, but I really felt at the time that I just couldn't or shouldn't talk about it at all. I felt like I had, you know, had like a numbing effect, and I just didn't talk about it. But today, I really want to talk about that. And so people will tell us their little bits of this, so it kind of helps just to add all this information. And, you know, it might help find a piece of the puzzle to all this one day. So we take down their information, and, you know, it's just really kind of fun to hear people still very excited about this. And they all say it did change their lives. It kind of rocked their world a little bit and changed their lives from that point on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And to add to that, one of the common threads that Stacy and I both have noticed over the years with various witnesses that we've spoke with is everybody had basically a spiritual or an emotional experience aside from the awe of the experience itself. There was sort of a, I don't want to use the word psychic experience, it was an emotional experience, and people that saw the Phoenix lights, they were sort of mesmerized and quieted and silenced while they watched it, while this thing slowly glided over the city, over their head. I remember talking to one fellow who lived here in 97, and he called and talked to me, 2 years ago, and he's living in New Jersey now. And at the time, he was about 22 years old living here, and he and his buddy were coming back from work one night, and they were going down Glendale Avenue or something. Anyway, they went over the freeway, and his buddy looked to the right, and this is the 51. At the time, it was called Squaw Peak. the freeway 51, they looked to their right, to the north, and his buddy who was riding with him said, "Hey, I think we're going to see an airplane crash here. There was a big jumbo jet ready to land on the freeway." And then as he got to looking a little more, and he says, "Oh my God," he says, "that is not, that's way bigger than a commercial jet." So they got over the freeway and they pulled off the side onto a side street, 18th Ave. And they got out of their car, and there were six or seven other people outside, out of their car, standing in the middle of the street. And everybody was looking up at this thing as it slowly, you know, came overhead. And he said they all just stood there and looked at this. Nobody said a word. Nobody was saying anything. And after the thing slowly kind of moved off to the south, everybody just got back in their car, not saying a word to anyone, just got back in their car, and they drove home. And he said it was just the weirdest thing. Is 2 days later, when he was going back to work, he finally started talking about it. But that's been sort of the common thread among everybody, that they had this this feeling of just watch and don't be afraid, just watch. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to a 30-year veteran for commercial airline pilot, and he said basically the same thing, that he had this feeling of just watch, you know. And so that's kind of fun to hear. Yeah. Those things. This was not meant to be threatening. We don't know what it was. And Dr. Lynn Kitai says this all the time. She says, "I don't know what it was. We just know that it was." Mm-hmm. It happened. It really did.
Now, changing subjects, and I want to ask this just because it's more timely. And, of course, I'm a big MUFON advocate. I'm always talking about MUFON, and we have many MUFON guests. But there was some controversy about the symposium. And as state directors, I was wanting to get your comments. We only have a couple minutes left. But so, of course, the topic was on the far end of the fringe scale. Of course, at the UFO Congress, we have speakers at that far end occasionally as well. But that, you know, a lot of people argue this is MUFON. It's supposed to be scientific in nature. What did you all take from that? I mean, what was your perspective?
Well, when I first heard what the subject or the theme of the symposium was, I was a little bit surprised. And then when I heard who the speakers were going to be, I was even more surprised, because this is not your usual MUFON stuff. Usually MUFON is much more factual-based, science-based, nuts and bolts. But MUFON is coming out of that mold just a little bit, and it's a good thing that they do, or they would be going the way of the dinosaurs. So, you know, after going to the symposium and listening to these speakers, and I was really looking forward to listening to them and watching them in person, because it's different than hearing them or reading their book or, you know, watching a YouTube. I wanted to see them in person, and I think it was really great that MUFON went ahead and offered this to people, because it gave everyone a chance to listen to it, and then they can form their own judgments on it, and then you decide what way you want to go with it. Now, if this stuff had never been presented to the public like this, if MUFON hadn't presented this, you would still be in the dark and fighting and squabbling and not knowing what to think about this. So I have to give MUFON kudos for, you know, being brave enough to present this stuff out there when it was so controversial, and, you know, just exposing the public to it and letting people figure out for themselves what way they want to go on it. So I really enjoyed it. I still don't know exactly what way I'm going on this, but I know that we did learn a lot by watching this. We were exposed to a lot of different material and information, and so that just allows people to go home and do their own research, and then they can decide.
It has created a ripple through the organization. But I think that this was a good piece of strategy coming from Jan Harzan and the headquarters and the team. As we know, the Corey Good, the Andrew Basiago, and the others, they are headlining in pop culture right now on YouTubes and things like that. And so, like Jan said in his advertisement, when he's advertising the symposium, he said, "Just come and listen. And then ask the hard questions, and you decide." MUFON is not saying that they're endorsing the secret space program. They're putting it out there for us to draw our own conclusions and get us motivated to do our own research. And that's what MUFON's all about, is public awareness and promoting research and investigation on a personal level. So this did, I know there's a lot of controversy. I know there's a lot of mixed feelings, but if you step back and you look at what happened last weekend, I think it was a good thing. I think MUFON needed to do this. And like Stacy said, you know, we can set back and we can go the way of the dinosaurs, or we can move forward and investigate everything that comes along. You got to kick open every door and have a look. And I think that's what we did. We opened some doors.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, great. It's great to hear your perspective. And I was not as hot on the speakers, but what made the whole conference for me is that you guys won a very deserving award, and I'm so happy about that. And thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Alejandro, thank you so much for that. We really enjoyed it.
We really enjoy talking to you and your group. Thank you for inviting us. Yes.
Thank you so much to Jim and Stacy for being on the show. That was a lot of fun. I'm so happy that they won that award because it was so totally deserved. They do a great job. And it's incredible that they were able to get so many, you know, high-level speakers, speakers you would see, you know, at conferences all over the place at our monthly meetings here in the Arizona area. Really cool stuff. If you want to find out more, Google Phoenix MUFON. You're going to find their website, and you'll also find them on Facebook. So thank you again. And again, congratulations on a well-deserved award. That was unexpected and a lot of fun. Otherwise, I also want to thank Martin Willis from UFO Podcast for helping out with the news at the beginning. I am super excited to be on KGRA, so welcome to any new listeners who maybe haven't heard us before that are listening now on KGRA. I also want to thank Caleb Hanks. He is the one who does the opening and the close music, and I believe Micah Hanks, his brother, does a show on KGRA as well. So Micah is a really cool dude. They both are. They're both also super hilarious, funny dudes. But I digress. The UFO Congress, we're so excited that it has now launched. You can go to ufocongress.com to register. And you do want to register now because you get the super early bird special. So you get the lowest pricing and you save a lot. You save like $100 if you go to ufocongress.com right now. The speakers are not listed yet. However, they will be listed soon. In fact, if you tune in next week, I'll be talking about some of the listener or some of the speakers that we're going to have at the UFO Congress in 2018. By the way, the conference is February 14th to the 18th. I don't think I mentioned that before. And if you follow the website, you'll be able to find out more about the speakers as well. In fact, if you go to openminds.tv or to ufocongress.com, you're going to see a section where you can add yourself to the mailing list. And if you do that, then you're going to be able to get updates on what's going on. You'll also be able to take advantage of specials. So, for instance, we have a new UFO Congress store that you can reach through the ufocongress.com. And we've got like 50% off, grand opening of the store, you know, tons of discounts there on some of your favorite speakers and their lectures. So go check that out. Again, I'm super happy. Thank you so much to KGRA for hosting openminds.tv. And thank you all for listening. Until next week, people, adios, muchachos.